This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney. The Metropolitan Sewer District's getting a multi-billion dollar upgrade, but bidding for the project has come to a halt as Hamilton County, which owns MSD, and Cincinnati, which operates it, work on coming up with an agreement on several of the city's hiring and bidding policies for the project. Joining me this afternoon are Hamilton County Commissioner Chris Monzel and Cincinnati Councilmember Chris Seelbach. You can join the discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon to both of you, and thanks for being here this afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank
Good
you,
afternoon.
Mark.
Thank you.
Commissioner Monzel, how did we get to the point where we have a countywide sewer system? That's kind of an interesting piece of history in itself.
Well, the county is an arm of the state government, and so the state government allowed counties to set up sewer districts. And so the sewer district here, sewer district number one in our county, was created in the 1920s. And other municipalities in the area had their own sewer systems. And Loveland was one example. The city had their sewer system. And so over time, over those 40 years until 1960s, they all operated independently. And back then, our city leaders decided, county leaders, that, hey, is there more opportunities for cost savings and for efficiencies to combine them all into one sewer system and create the Metropolitan Sewer District, which they did in April of 1968. And in that agreement, they said that the city of Cincinnati would be the operator of the system, and then the county would be technically the owner of it that took care of the financial obligations for the system.
Is there a timeline when this expires?
So it expires in 2018, so 5 years from now. It's set to expire unless the city and the county come to an agreement that would prolong it, which I think is the kind of understanding that that's probably what we'd like to do. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Now, this project to upgrade the Metropolitan Sewer District, I've heard one of the words used to describe it as massive. Is that accurate? I mean, what is the scope of this project?
So it's probably one of the largest, if not largest, projects this region is going to see in our lifetime. So it's going to cost about $3.2 billion to replace our sewer systems. And, you know, we're not choosing to do this. This is a result of a lawsuit where the federal government is requiring us to replace our sewer systems. So the county and the city is not trying to charge people more or, you know, we're not doing this because we just want to. We're required to do it from the federal government.
And that was brought on by a lawsuit that was put in place by the Sierra Club and also the EPA from the state as well as the federal level, which basically people were having sewage back up into their basements, back into their backyards. Because what we have in Hamilton County and a lot of these older cities is a sewer system that combined not only sanitary sewers out of people's houses, but also the stormwater sewers that were in the streets. So being in Cincinnati and blessed with many hills and a lot of rain that happens here, we get quite a bit of stormwater that surges into these combined sewer overflows where you have both sanitary sewers coming in from people's houses and the storm sewers coming in from the city, and thus causing backups in people's basements and in people's backyard, thus leading to a health concern. And that's why the Sierra Club brought it forward, as well as the Ohio EPA and the federal EPA in suing the Metropolitan Sewer District. And thus, out of that came this consent decree that said, we're going to go in and fix it. We're going to separate those combined sewer overflows, so no longer will the rainwater be going into the sewer system, but rather it'll be in a separate system. And that's what's causing this increased amount of work. And I brought a little picture here. It's the mountain, I call it. It's this $3.2 billion worth
that's impressive.
Of work. Well, it's scary, right? Because everything in the little blue region here is what we funded so far. And we have a massive amount of work that needs to be done over the next 30-plus years. Now, there's two phases of it. The first phase is over in 2018, which seems to be a recurring date, as that's when the contract expires between the city and the county. That's phase one. Phase two starts then, but there's been no end date that has been assigned to it. So therefore, that's kind of a good thing from our standpoint because you can kind of prolong some of these projects in order to get money to fund it that you're not trying to come up with this $3.2 billion today, but rather you could have 10, 20, 30 years, 40 years to complete all the work that needs to be done.
But we do have to meet some milestones before 2018. That if we don't, we could be sanctioned, both the city and the county, by the federal government from not meeting those benchmarks that would show our progression towards replacing our sewer system.
This all falls under the Clean Water Act, is that correct?
Correct. Okay. And one of those milestones we just passed this last December, which is regarding the Lower Mill Creek partial remedy solution. So again, if you're looking at our geography of our area, all the water tends to go downhill, downstream, and where does it collect? But in the Mill Creek Basin is one of the largest areas that gets all this rainwater and all this, you know, issues of sewers. And with that, the EPA came in and said, you need to address that. You need to come up with some solution. And they proposed that we build this massive concrete tunnel that's going to be, you know, 30 feet wide, 200 feet deep, go from Hopple Street all the way down to Guest Street. It just was a massive project that would basically take this stormwater and hold it, you know, hold up to a billion gallons of rainwater so that it'd be separated from the sanitary sewer system. Well, that project was going to cost close to $600 million just to build that tunnel. I mean, you would bring in mining equipment in order to build this thing, you know, along the Mill Creek, along I-75 to pull it off. And so with that, you know, we're saying that's just an incredible amount of money. That's two Paul Brown, not quite two Paul Brown stadiums, but, you know, a couple of massive, probably the largest public infrastructure project ever in this region. And MSD came up with the solution of, well, why don't we do something different? Why don't we look at an alternative solution where we do some green initiatives where we daylight it, the Lick Run Creek to capture that rainwater and create some grasslands that would actually hold the rainwater, because once you collect it, you have to treat it. So you don't have to pay the cost just to collect the water. You have to pay the cost to now treat the water. So if you divert it from the system, you actually save money. And therefore, that cost of the recent proposal they put through is at least $240 million.
Hey, Chris Seelbach, you're shaking your head as he's going along.
So far, we agree on everything.
Yeah, so far you agree on everything. That's the good thing. Let's take this call. This is a topic we're going to get into a little bit more as we go along in the show. But we have John from Norwood. John, good afternoon. What's your comment?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
That's great. I was just wanting to comment about the MSD responsible bidder language. I just wanted to thank Mr. Seelbach and the commissioners for putting it through. That entails that there will be an apprenticeship and a pre-apprenticeship program that will help citizens in the community be prepared for this work that's coming up. It provides training which will lead to a career path for people within our work, and it's good for ratepayers to be able to get some of their money back by being involved in some of this work that's coming up. As you know, that MSD project, although it's $3 billion, a lot of that money is paid by taxpayers. And it would be a good thing that they can get involved in the system, especially during these times, since we're going through this recession, to be involved in a career path that they can get involved in Hamilton County. I think it's just a wonderful thing. And I hope that they continue to work towards that. Continue to help citizens. Yeah.
John, thank you for your comment. We appreciate it. And Chris Seelbach, your response.
Yeah, so let's back up a little bit.
What is responsible bidder?
Let's back up a little bit. You know, and I'd like to start off, you know, when I was elected in 2011, one of the first things I did was say, you know, we always hear politicians talk about jobs. And, you know, I'm the jobs guy and jobs first. And if you elect me, I'll focus on jobs. And I think most of us as, you know, engaged citizens understand that that's really a lot of rhetoric. And, you know, there's not a lot of action that we see that really we feel like affects us and helps people that we know and love get jobs. And so when I was elected, I tried to ask the question, is there something as a city council member I can do to help more local people, more Cincinnatians, more people in this region actually get jobs and the training that they would need to maintain an entire career? So they're not worrying about foreclosures and providing food for their family. And, you know, one of the discussions we had in trying to answer that question was this, you know, huge project that's going to impact our region, that's going to bring a real big pot of money, $3.2 billion, that's going to be used to replace our sewers. And so it's a lot of labor. It's a lot of new jobs. And so the question was, could we use this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to help Cincinnati people get those jobs and get the training along the way so that when the job is over, they can continue into a career? And so that is the goal of Responsible Bidder, is to get local people the jobs and the job training needed to make sure that, you know, we're not bringing in workforce from Florida or Indiana, but it's local people who are getting this money. So that's really the goal of Responsible Bidder.
Chris Monzel, your reaction to this, because is this the sticking point in the whole thing right now?
I don't think it's just a sticking point. I think there's several factors that are in place here, and let's step back a little bit in the last year. So 2012, there were three different ordinances that went through City Council. And now City Council is the operator of the Metropolitan Sewer District. The Metropolitan Sewer District are city employees, and so they must follow city law. So the City Council at that time passed through two ordinances dealing with local hire and local preference.
A 9-0 vote, Republicans and Democrats.
Correct. And then also the responsible bidder ordinance that Councilmember Seelbach was just talking about. And the issue that we have at the county is that the Metropolitan Sewer District Administration, their rules state that they will follow county procurement policies. And so there was never any type of outreach from the MSD to come in and say, well, you know, we want to follow these policies now from the city. They just did it. They're like, well, the city passed this, we're going
to
follow it.
And to be fair, a county commission under a different leadership did pass a responsible bidder law when David Pepper and Todd Portune were on council together. That was very similar to what we passed.
And just for some clarification, we do resolutions. We don't do laws because we're not a legislative body. We're actually an executive branch body. So for our resolutions, that was actually repealed when I came in office in January 2011, myself and Commissioner Hartman. And looking at the other items that since that was 2011, these came in 2012 in regards to these local hire, local preference, and responsible bidder. Out of the three ordinances, two are categorically illegal for a county to have as policies for a metropolitan sewer district. So the state of Ohio and the Ohio Revised Code says we cannot have any local preferences or local geographic hiring in our language for how we bid out projects. So right off the bat, two of these ordinances have to be repealed. They just have to. Responsible bidder is different. There is no language that the Ohio Revised Code tells us what we can and can't do. However, it does say that there is some concern, and we can talk a little bit about this after, I don't know how much more time we got, a couple more minutes, after a break on a recent ruling by Judge Black on a case between the city and a local contractor in regards to not only the two local hire ordinances, but also the responsible bidder ordinance and how they might be impacting federal guidelines and being constitutional or not. So there's concern there.
You know, I'm one council member, so I can't speak for all of my colleagues, but I'm willing to repeal the local hire and local preference. You know, those sound good, but it's kind of like, to some of us, No Child Left Behind sounds good because no one wants to leave children behind, but some of us feel like a lot of people were. So local hire and local preference, I'd be willing to repeal. So in terms of my conversation, what we're really talking about is a compromise, trying to find a compromise on responsible bidder, which I believe will have the same effect of actually getting local people hired.
We'll continue our conversation after the break, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Continuing the conversation about the Metropolitan Sewer District and the city and county's disagreement over hiring and bidding policies for the project, you can join this discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Cincinnati Councilmember Chris Seelbach and Hamilton County Commissioner Chris Monzel are in the studio this afternoon. Chris Seelbach, you had mentioned you wouldn't mind repealing two of these ordinances. What would it take to do that?
Well, it would take a vote of City Council, so the majority of City Council would
have to be
a
majority,
or? Yes, it does have to be a majority. And you know, I'm willing to do that. I don't know that all of my colleagues, I don't know if there's enough people willing to do that. It was Charlie Winburn, Republican member of City Council. This was his ordinance. So the responsible bidder is what I proposed. Both did pass, but Charlie Winburn is the one who worked on and brought forth the local preference, local hire.
So the chances for repeal, are they better now or are they better after November?
You're
Good
assuming
question.
That politics
Good question.
Well, I guess that depends on who's on council both before and after. But, you know, I think that there's room for a repeal beforehand. It's something that I would bring forth for a vote. but I think there needs to be some education on other council members on why we would pass this to begin with and what's changed and why we need to repeal it. But it's something, you know, I've told Commissioner Monzel that I'm willing to fight for in order to find a resolution on responsible bidder.
And actually he did. He actually did bring forward a motion at the end of June,
yep.
Which tried to get through committee, but unfortunately did not get the votes to get out of committee.
Right.
Which in the long run, for all this issue, it's all three combined, unfortunately.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater here,
right.
but they're all specifically ordinances that are in direct violation of what we want to accomplish through Ohio Revised Code. So following the state rules, you know, we have to get rid of the local preference and local hiring ordinances because they are illegal, and it violates the privileges and immunity clauses. I'm not a lawyer, but that's what the ruling from Judge Black on that case back in February of this year that said, you know, the local hire, local preferences, it definitely violates that. It's not constitutional. And that he did also have concerns in regards to the apprenticeship language within the responsible bidder and how that affects the ERISA requirements for the federal government in regards to health care. And that's another issue that is potentially constitutionality of it.
There aren't requirements for health care, but it is a factor. It's a factor that can be considered, but there's no mandates for health care under responsible bidder.
So it looked like we were making some progress earlier in the summer, and then the August 1st deadline came and went, and nothing happened. So we're back to square one, I take it. And what is the center point? I mean, you seem to be somewhat in agreement on the 2 points. Is the apprenticeship program the real sticking point here?
I think it is within the responsible bidder ordinance itself. There's two aspects of it that are kind of the hinge points, I call them. One is the current responsible bidder order that's in place as of August 1st has a 5-year graduation requirement for an apprenticeship program. So if you own a company, Mark, and you came in and you wanted to bid on a project for the city, and I own a company, and I have folks in an apprenticeship program, and I've graduated folks for the last 5 years.
Just one a year.
One a year for the last 5 years, and you haven't, I will get the bid over you even though your bid might be lower. And that's the language that's in place right now. And then also there's language in there that gives a 10-cent per hour, per worker payment to go into the apprenticeship training fund. That's another kind of sticking point because, again, back to my premise, in order to keep the rates low for our ratepayers of the system, we got to keep our costs low. So anything that drives up cost is going to be a problem of driving up rates for Hamilton County ratepayers. And, you know, we got seniors on fixed income. You got businesses that are impacted by this as well. You know, you have businesses out there that are looking at their water bill. It's not a water bill anymore. I call it a sewer bill because about 2/3 of it are actually costs for the sewer improvements. So there are a lot of concerns of, well, how do we keep the cost low, but at the same time, develop opportunities for workforce, you know, development within our community. And that's I know where Councilmember Seelbach is coming from, and we're trying to work on those issues, but there's language in there that's kind of making it difficult, and how do we fix that?
So let me talk about the apprentice program. So, you know, we have this $3.2 billion that is going to be used to hire people, and it's skilled labor type of work. I mean, it's, you know, you have to understand how to replace our sewers and be trained in that in order to get the jobs. And so the apprentice part of this is to get those workers the skills they need so that they have the opportunity to actually get the job. And so it's important that we not only send them to an apprentice program, but that they graduate from it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, would you want to send your child to a grade school that can't graduate one single person for every year for the last 5 years? I think most of us would look at that school and say, well, they're probably not very good at what they're doing if they can't graduate just one person. And so we do want this graduation project, this graduation standard, so that we actually get workers that have the skills to get these jobs. Because if they don't have the skills, then we're still going to do the projects. We're just going to be bringing in people from outside this region, and it's a big opportunity lost for Cincinnati workers. I will say that the pre-apprentice part of this is 10 cents on an hourly work. We estimate it's going to be about $1.5 million of a $3.2 billion project, so 0.0005% of the entire project. The apprenticeship part is paid for by the employee. So it's the employee who gets the benefit because they're getting the training skills, and it's them who's paying for it. The pre-apprenticeship is paid for by the ratepayer or the employer. And we want to do that because, you know, an apprenticeship is like a college. It's a 4-year program, and a lot of people, you have to pick which apprenticeship that you want. So a carpentry, a laborer, an operator, a plumber. Well, a lot of people don't know exactly what trade is best for them. And so the pre-apprenticeship kind of is like that intro class that says, look, here's the building trades. Here's what a construction career could look like. Which is the best fit for you? And let's help you get to the point where you can get into an apprenticeship program. And so that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, we're willing, you know, the sticking point that's been in the media is that, you know, the only apprenticeship programs right now that are graduating people are run by union shops. And so there's this kind of argument that this is some kind of favor to the union. I would push back on that and say, why aren't we asking why these non-union shops can't graduate just one person a year for an amount of time? I'm willing to talk about the potential of flipping it instead of saying that you have to have shown that, you know, there's a five-year graduation rate in the past. Let's give an incentive for people to start graduating people starting today so that no one is excluded. Everyone can bid on it, whether union or non-union, but let's give incentives starting today for people who actually do graduate because they're benefiting Cincinnati. And just the final point, we've always awarded contracts. This is not new, based on lowest and best. We've never said whoever is the lowest, you get the prize. We've always factored in best, but we've just defined best differently in the past.
And that's where when a bid comes in and how the city now defines best, we could before have 10 or 12 companies bidding on a project, but now due to the language of the responsible bidder, if they didn't have this apprenticeship requirement, those companies now go from 10 or 12 down to 3 that bid on it, and thus your cost increase. So we,
although no contract that has been awarded over what the MSD has estimated. So we've actually, all of them were awarded under the estimates, so we've actually saved money.
But the question is, could we have saved more money if we didn't have those requirements in there? And that's, at the end of the day, where we're trying to drive for the ratepayers of Hamilton County, which includes the city of Cincinnati, is you got to keep our cost as low as possible. And especially on these big public infrastructure projects. I mean, you heard of the big dig up in Boston and how much it overran. You know, the stadium, Paul Brown Stadium overruns. I mean, time and time again, big, massive public works projects tend to have waste and a lot of abuse that takes place, and therefore it hurts the ratepayers and taxpayers at the end of the day. And that's why we're trying to make sure that we have competition that's in this that ensures that folks can get in there and be able to participate, because now we're blocking out other county businesses. You know, they might not be in the city of Cincinnati. They might not be related, you know, as a union shop, but some of these open shops that have been here for hundreds of years doing business in Hamilton County, and now they're coming in and saying, no, you can't get that bid for MSD because you don't meet these certain requirements. And to Chris's point about training our workforce, I agree. I think there's great opportunities here, but I think we're already doing it. I mean, we have the Southwest Ohio Workforce Investment Board that's in place that we're spending millions of taxpayer dollars to train folks to give them opportunities to work on these projects.
I mean, I just think that there's tens of thousands of people in this region that would disagree because they don't have a job and they want a job. They want to be able to work. And these are good paying jobs. The prevailing wage set by the state for an electrician is $35 an hour. These are jobs that if we could get local people in them, they could really support their families and not worrying about foreclosures and putting food on the table. And if they were going to be let go, then, you know, are they going to be on the streets? So, you know, I think there's tens of thousands of people who would disagree that we're doing a good enough job of getting people jobs.
But the ironic aspect of the apprenticeship program is they don't get paid prevailing wage. As an apprentice, you don't get paid prevailing wage. If you're not an apprentice and in a non-union shop, you will get paid prevailing wage, which is higher wages for the workers. So, I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, that, you know, interesting points to this that, you know, at one point there's a positive and there's a negative.
It's a much more complicated issue
really is.
Than what it appears to be on the surface, isn't it?
It is.
Brenda is calling from downtown. What's your comment, Brenda?
Hi. Yes, I wanted to just comment on the need for apprenticeship program. I think the biggest issue and conversation that people who don't understand about apprenticeship program, these are portable skills that these construction people will be learning. Not only will they be able to do the work here, but they'll be able to transport these skills elsewhere and continue to build their career. Every other industry, from marketing to even the medical field, people invest in professional development. Why should we not in the construction industry? It's one of the most dangerous industries out here, and I just believe that we should value this and try to encourage that more contractors are out there building these workers' skills as they continue to work on these federally funded projects.
Brenda, thank you very much for your comment. And you can join the discussion as well by calling 513-419-7100. Reactions, gentlemen?
Well, just to say, what they are paid prevailing wage. There's different levels depending on what year you are in your apprentice program, but you are paid a prevailing wage when you're in an apprenticeship program. I agree with her. We need to, you know, the construction industry, a construction career is something that we should be proud of. It helped build our middle class. It's what built many parts of my family. And I don't think that we should be, you know, trying to make, you know, I think we should be supportive and proud of that. And I think apprentice programs help build that up. And
what do you say to the guy who has 30 years experience in something, though, never went through an apprenticeship program, but has 30 years of experience in a skill? What do you say to that person?
Well, we're not requiring that every single worker has to go through an apprentice program. But we're saying that if you want these contracts, then you have to show that you are sending some people, one person a year for the last 5 years through an apprentice program, so that we can show we are investing in some of our workers to get them the skills needed for an entire career in a construction industry. But by no means does a 30-year worker have to start over.
And so the question is, how many people are we talking about? How many people are going to be going into an apprenticeship program? And typically I've heard numbers between 20 and 30 folks that might be going in or graduating per year. And then when you're looking at a 30-year project or even longer, you're talking maybe 1,000 employees, maybe a little bit more than that. But the cost of to the ratepayers of Hamilton County to make sure that those 1,000 folks get through apprenticeship program is going to increase rates about 12% on average, if not higher. And how, you know, how is the balance of the cost worth it, especially when there's already existing programs in place? You know, you have construction industry folks from ACI to ABC who have training programs, but they're not similar. They're probably similar to the apprenticeship programs to the unions that provide the same training and skills. It's just in a different manner. To me, can't we utilize those training programs already and give these companies who are utilizing them an opportunity to say, I am training them. Why can't I bid on the project too?
So, I mean, I think the cost is 0.0005% of the entire project, because the apprenticeship part of this comes out of the employee's prevailing wage. We would be paying the exact same amount of money whether or not they're going through an apprenticeship program or not. The only cost to the ratepayer is the 10 cents on an hourly wage, and that adds up to about $1.5 million on a $3.2 billion project.
But I think the point's missing is that if a company can't bid on the project because they don't meet the apprenticeship requirements, the responsible bidder, the cost increase, because before you might have 10 bids, but now you have 3.
And just,
so even though there isn't a cost per se based on apprenticeship paying for it, you got a cost of doing business because now you have less competition and less.
But just to go back to my other point, which is that the contracts that have been awarded since this went in place, every single one of them have been underestimate. So we saved money, and the majority of them, over the majority, went to non-union shops.
Margaret from Lower Price Hill, good afternoon. What's your comment?
Hi. Councilmember Seelbach earlier said that only the unions have training programs, and that is just factually inaccurate. Training is governed by Ohio statute, and regardless of whether it's the Association of Builders and Contractors or a union shop or electrical companies getting together to do training, which they do, they are all governed by the same statutes. The training is exactly the same, and by restricting the bidding to only union shops, which is what obviously Councilmember Seelbach wants to do, you are restricting the supply of labor, so the price is going to go up. That is very basic economics, and I guess I shouldn't be shocked, since he's a Cincinnati council member, that he doesn't understand that.
Well, that's not what I said. I said that there's an argument that this only helps the unions because they're the only ones, many of these shops, who can actually show that they've graduated apprentices.
That's not true.
Yes,
it is. That is factually not true.
So you
the
can.
The Ohio Valley Chapter of Associated Builders and Contractors has been running apprenticeship training programs for decades and graduates people every single year.
Well, then they should have no problem with this ordinance. Then everyone is equal. That's not what I've been told, and that's not what.
But I guess that's the question is for the smaller companies, especially minority-owned businesses, who are a small firm that might not have as many people going through this over the last 5 years. And I've heard from minority-owned businesses who don't support the responsible bidder requirements that say it actually hurts, that point to apprenticeship programs and say There's not many minorities in apprenticeship programs right now with the unions. And what the effect is going to be on them is basically taking them out of the marketplace and not being able to bid on these MSD contracts. And that's $3.2 billion, even though, you know, Councilmember Subak's bringing up the 0.0015%. You're still talking millions of dollars that are going to be generated in extra cost based on that.
And Margaret, thank you for your comment.
If I could make one other comment without going into the unions and how they've always discriminated against minorities, I'd also like to point out the unions are fabulous for enrolling at-risk youth in pre-apprenticeship programs. And then when these kids graduate and get to a job site, they go, oops, sorry, you've got a felony. You can't work on this job site. And unions have been doing that for a very long time.
Again, Margaret, thanks for your comments. We appreciate it. And if you'd like to get on the discussion, 513-419-7100 is the phone number. Jeff from Finneytown is joining us. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hi. I've just caught the program in the middle, so I hope I'm not off topic. But I practiced workers' compensation law for 18 years. I'm also a landlord, and I feel the huge expenditures being made by court order are a very substantial waste. I represented claimants in workers' compensation cases, and I never saw one instance of anybody getting sick from bad water. I'm sure some people have, but it's been very small. I suspect that what has happened is that people are grossed out by how ugly it looks, and so we have this very expensive program, which in my mind is throwing away $3 billion or whatever. And on top of that, as a landlord, people cannot afford these rate increases, and people are going to be homeless because they're going up so fast. And on top of that, when the consent order expires, they expect to ratchet it up more. So I think people should be asking themselves, are we really spending this money properly? And I realize there's a court order, but there ought to be some pushback saying this court order is incorrect and we need to do the right thing.
Jeff, thank you very much for your comment. We appreciate it.
So I've pushed back. I tried. I've talked to our lawyers to say, what if we don't do it? What if we don't do this work? And they point to a couple other cities in the country that did the same thing, and then EPA came in and took over, the federal government came in and took over their sewer system. Then I pushed back on the amount of money that was being asked to build it. Because to me, it seems kind of odd that the federal government can just eyeball and say, $3.2 billion is going to fix your system. And they said, well, yeah, you could push back on that. And I asked about Pittsburgh, actually, as an example. I said, Pittsburgh, same topography, kind of same geography, same kind of weather, hilly. What are they going through? Well, they're looking at possibly $8 billion fix for their sewer system. So they're like, $3.2 billion, you know, you guys are doing good with really no time constraints on it. You guys got a really good deal. Just, you know, get it done. You push back, you're going to really get into more issues. But that still doesn't mean that we can't go in and try and do things smarter and more effectively, efficiently, and cost-effective, such as this Lower Mill Creek partial remedy solution of using green initiatives to daylight the stream and use, you know, specific grasses and whatnot to collect the water, so therefore you're reducing your cost. I mean, those, at the end of the day, we need to keep our cost as low as possible and come up with ideas to control them. And as long as we remove the water from the system, and if we can do it cheaper than the $3.2 billion, then we'll be successful.
And we are. Every contract that's been awarded has been underestimated, so we are doing things cheaper.
And we could be doing them much cheaper, though. That's the issue. That's what we're pushing for. And actually, another point to that is, you know, I would hope that if the city felt this was such a great thing, that it shouldn't just apply to Metropolitan Sewer District projects or Cincinnati Waterworks projects, but why isn't it applying to the streetcar? Why aren't we doing this for roads and other projects that the city owns, that these rules only apply to these that are affected by the county ratepayers?
Pretty good question.
A good question. And I signed the motion that said, let's apply this to the streetcar. Councilmember Winburn proposed it. I signed it. There was only three signatures on it, so that's why we're not doing it.
And that's, I guess, the frustration level, right, of regarding city council dictating things that honestly are affecting other communities across our Hamilton County.
You got a couple of minutes left here, so sure. Let's take one more call. Matt from Cincinnati. Hello, Matt.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Good. Thank you. And what's your
comment? My question, because we're talking about MSD, and I'm a licensed plumber in Ohio and Kentucky based out of Cincinnati, I was hearing the comment about these apprenticeship schools not graduating people. I know I went to the CMPA, Cincinnati Master Plumber Association, and everybody who stayed in it till the fourth year graduated. So I'm just wondering what schools you're talking about.
Matt, thank you for the question, and we'll get your response here.
I mean, good question. It's the ones that are suing us and the ones that have a problem with this. I mean, I would love, my goal is not to help unions or non-unions. My goal is to get graduated apprentices so that they can get, so that we have local people getting this work. So I don't know. So I don't have a problem with the graduation rate, but there are a conglomeration of local contractors and large contractors that say they can't meet those requirements because they haven't been able to graduate one person a year for 5 years. So I don't have a list in front of me, but they're the ones who are challenging this, and they're the ones who are reaching out to county commissioners and members of council saying that we need to repeal this outright because for some reason they can't just graduate one person a year for 5 years.
And unfortunately, we're running out of time on this topic, and thank you both for being here with us today. Cincinnati Council Member Chris Seelbach, Hamilton County Commissioner Chris Monzel. And after the break, Bono said it might be the most perfect song in the world. A look at the unlikely ascent of the Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.